energy security or environmental peril, the Trump administration pushes again to open up Florida waters to offshore drilling.
The White House may auction off Florida's coastal waters to look for oil and natural gas, but Republicans warn it could cost the president votes in the Sunshine State.
So what would drilling mean, particularly in the oil-rich eastern Gulf of Mexico?
This is the Florida Roundup from WLRN Public Media in Miami and WJCT Public Media in Jacksonville. I'm Tom Hudson.
And I'm Melissa Ross. This hour, a closer look at the controversy over drilling off Florida coasts, the potential impact to the state's environment and its politics.
You can join the conversation statewide at 305-995-1800 or on Twitter. At Florida Roundup is our handle. It's all ahead on the Florida Roundup after the news. Welcome to the Florida Roundup. Thanks for listening to Florida Public Radio this week. I'm Tom Hudson in Miami.
And I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville. Well, early last year, the Trump administration said it would open up coastal waters for new oil and natural gas drilling. But after howls of complaints from Florida's congressional members, the Interior Department, well, they backed off that idea, saying Florida is obviously unique because of our coastal environment and our heavy reliance on tourism.
But, you know, Florida was never officially excluded from the effort to expand the search for fossil fuels under the sea off America's coastlines. David Bernhardt was a top deputy in the Interior Department pushing for this expanded exploration. And this week, the Senate confirmed him as the Interior Secretary.
That was a key step forward for oil and gas industry executives who'd like to see expanded drilling in our area. Another thing happened this week. Politico reported that the waters off Florida's Gulf Coast and its Atlantic Coast would, in fact, be opened for drilling under a five-year plan from the Trump administration. But here's the rub. Last November, voters here in Florida overwhelmingly approved a constitutional amendment that would ban offshore drilling in state waters. So this Friday, we're going to spend the full hour here on the Florida Roundup looking at this issue that's of great interest to so many residents around Florida. Energy and the environment. What's the right balance here in the Sunshine State? Give us a call right now here on the Florida Roundup, wherever you reside in the state. It's 305-995-1800, or tweet the show with your thoughts about offshore drilling at Florida Roundup as we welcome Zach Coleman. He's climate and energy reporter for Politico, and David R. Mica, executive director of the Florida Petroleum Council. And Zach, let's begin with you. As you're reporting, Bernhardt, the new Interior Secretary, has kept mum about this. He's saying that the department is in the early stages of looking at this whole idea. Your sources, though, in the oil and gas industry dispute that. They're saying this plan is nearly complete. So how far down the path are we, theoretically, when we think about the prospect of offshore drilling in the Southeast and potentially off Florida's coasts?
Well, first of all, thanks for having me. But there is kind of a way in which David Bernhardt is right and also is wrong about where he's at in this process. They have not yet put out the five-year draft plan that David Bernhardt has been working on. So at that stage, they're still at stage one. This has not been released for public comment yet. But at the same time, this is something that's been worked on for over a year at this point, and the industry pretty much knows what's going into this plan. They've been working on it behind the scenes at the Interior Department. They're talking to White House staffers. So it's pretty fully baked in this comment period. What needs to happen next is there actually will be a release to the public. There will be a comment period, and there could be changes after that depending on how people react to what the Trump administration puts on the table.
Let me bring in David Mica, the executive director of the Florida Petroleum Council. David, welcome to Florida Public Radio. Has the Petroleum Council in Florida been part of the discussions with the Interior Department regarding drilling in national waters?
Yes, and thank you for the opportunity to be with you and your listeners today. And it's very important to note that, you know, we're a division of the American Petroleum Institute, and industry is, in fact, in touch with Interior on a regular basis about existing permits and future operations and all that. But, you know, I am not a source to Zach to purport to know anything of what they're going to propose.
Well, I understand that, but I'm asking, David,
as well.
Have you been in those discussions with the Interior Department regarding the possibility of opening up new drilling locations in national waters in the Gulf Coast or the Atlantic Coast?
Yes, those discussions are ongoing. Always, industry is talking with Interior about access to new areas, and they occur pretty regularly.
And those areas are included in Florida?
Well, you know, in Florida is really the question. What does in Florida mean? You brought into the discussion the constitutional amendment. Well, those are Florida waters, and those are off limits protected by the Constitution. So what we're now talking about and what will come forth are areas that are federal waters, and that are all the people of the United States, and exactly where, you know, all of those waters are off the coast of Florida.
So, David, is the idea to get as close as you can to Florida without actually drilling off Florida's coast? Is that what's going on here? Enough of a buffer, far enough away that you could get around this moratorium on drilling in waters close to the Florida coast?
Well, certainly we're not interested in getting around anything. We want to have additional access. 94% of the waters of the United States are currently off limits to oil and gas exploration. Our industry wants to have more access to them. And in some frontier areas, some areas that we haven't been able to get to before. And the research on a lot of those areas is very old. And in order for America to retain its energy independence that we have now gained, we're going to need to begin to explore and look for oil in new areas. And, you know, off the coast of Florida, everything's off the coast of Florida.
What would you, of course. But what about the polling on this, David? This is really unpopular in Florida. 64% of Florida voters oppose offshore drilling. That's why this ballot measure passed overwhelmingly in November. Let me ask you about this, Zach, too. The politics of this in Florida are pretty difficult. So what would be the blowback for the Trump administration, say, if they did move forward with this in Florida?
Well at this polling... I'm sorry, this is David. The polling changes dramatically given given situations of the time. Polling associated with when prices go very high change those polls dramatically. If there's an international incident somewhere that could begin to restrict our access to oil, those polls change dramatically. What we have to do as a nation is look at the long term, and we have an orderly process, and that's the five-year plan that we're all waiting for.
Zach Coleman, let me ask you about the talk that Florida heard back in January of 2018 and what we're hearing now and what your reporting is informing you. The former Interior Secretary Zinke, 5 days after he kind of floated this plan of opening up some of these previously prohibited areas of federal waters for oil and gas exploration, heard the blowback from the Florida congressional delegation and by word kind of took them off the table, but not by policy or deed. So they've always been in the mix. Is that correct?
That's exactly right. What happened was Zinke went down there. He essentially, from what most people have observed, gave Rick Scott a political favor. Scott was campaigning at the time against Bill Nelson for Senate, and Nelson had made the environment an issue. Red Tide was going on, offshore drilling, that plan was out in the atmosphere. But what happened, right, there was no deed there. So it wasn't long after that a lot of Atlantic Coast governors who opposed drilling said, hey, we have problems with drilling too. We are also worried about our environment and our tourism. Why don't you respect our state's rights? So it got to be a little bit of a political mess for the Trump administration. And in fact, just weeks later, a career official at the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management, which is a part of Interior and actually has jurisdiction over this plan, testified in Congress saying, well, what Zinke said isn't actually anything we've put into practice. So they're actually trying to do a little bit of what David was referencing, which is come up with that buffer, and can we kind of rhetorically get far enough away from Florida's coast to say, hey, like, I know this is near Florida, but it's not really Florida's coast.
It's 305-995-1800. Give us a call on the Florida Roundup as we talk about the prospect of offshore drilling in the state. Let me ask you, Zach, as a follow-up. A spokesperson who's pro-drilling is Jim Webb, the former Democratic governor of Virginia. And he has been touting this idea, not just for Florida, but in other parts of the country, the safety issue. The 2010 BP oil spill in the Gulf, of course, has made this really, really difficult politically. What about Webb's argument that many safety features have been put in place since the Deepwater Horizon spill, and that we wouldn't be able to see derricks from our beaches if this were to happen again in the state? How credible are those arguments?
Well, first of all, there were safety measures put in place, but as my colleague Ben Lefebvre, who worked on this story with me on offshore drilling, has reported in the past, there have been a lot of exemptions issued for many of those safety measures that were put in by the Obama administration. The Trump administration has basically said, we know that those offshore drilling regulations are onerous for you, so industry, we won't make you follow them. So it's whether these rules are being enforced that matters. And if you look at a public opinion polling in Florida, it doesn't really matter how far from the coast this drilling is. People just don't like it. And you can ask Republican congressmen, as I did this past couple weeks, are there any conditions in which you could support offshore drilling off the coast? Whether you can't see it, whether you can be ensured it's entirely environmentally safe, and uniformly, lawmakers have told me, no, there's no way that I can support this.
Now, David, what about that, given that there's an uphill battle, a bipartisan pushback to this in Florida? Of course, the White House wouldn't need congressional approval to move forward on this, but certainly here on the ground in Florida, you'd see that, as Zach just pointed out. So what's your response to that, given that there really is bipartisan opposition to this here in Florida?
Well, there's a couple of things there. And again, I'll go back to opposition changes very quickly in the course of human events. And should our nation begin a national security change that could happen overnight, that would change. Should something else dramatically affect the price of products, that opposition changes very, very quickly. And the politics change. Let me address a couple of things that Zach mentioned, though. The fact that offshore energy development is now safer than it ever has been, and it's continually improving, it's very important to note. As Senator Webb mentions, it's also very important to note when, in the context of some of the regulations that he talks about and us seeking exemptions for, it's often because that regulation is already outdated and we want to use a practice that is better and continuing process improvements that are put into place by the industry. More than 100 different regulations have changed the course of that, and our production standards have changed and strengthened since 2010. And it's very, very important to note that, not in the context of trying to get away from them, but because engineering and technology changes so rapidly. When you think about it, the technology in your pocket or on the phone that you're using, and you think back to 2010 and that old technology, and then you compare that to the phone that you may be using now, the recognition is more apparent that we are evolving in a big way technologically, and we in the industry are changing in a big way as well.
David, a couple of quick follow-ups there. One is, how deep are you talking about? The Deepwater Horizon, of course, was one of those ultra-deep facilities that was not anchored to the seabed because it was drilling so far deep. The area that you're talking about here, is it as deep as the Deepwater Horizon, or is it more shallow waters?
Certainly, deep water production is very essential to us, and that has enhanced as well in many of these ways in areas where you're looking at thousands and thousands of feet of just water column before reaching the surface, and that has taken place. We must remember.
Does that include? Is that the kind of thing that we're talking about here in this 5-year plan that the Trump administration is considering off the coast of Florida in these federal waters? Is it akin to the deep water horizon? In terms of the depth of the water.
Let me mention something just to halt you there a second. Each time you mention the deep water horizon, when we talk about space travel, each time we reference it, we don't reference the Challenger disaster or other space disaster.
Well, so perhaps not, but
technology today.
Okay, fair enough. All right, but the deep water horizon was ultra deep water. People are familiar with that, David. We cannot argue that point.
Sure.
What I'm simply asking you is, what is the depth of the federal waters that are being considered to be opened up for oil exploration that are off the coast of Florida?
Sure. Federal waters vary in depth depending on where it is, but it does include deep water and ultra-deep water as well, going out 200 miles. And let's remember that when we say off the coast of Florida, 17% of America's energy is derived off the coast of Florida in the Gulf of Mexico, in the central and western Gulf.
Let's go to your calls now here on the Florida Roundup. What do you think about this revived push for offshore drilling in Florida as the Trump administration once again floats this idea? Send us your tweets at Florida Roundup, calls to 305-995-1800. Let's begin in Palm Beach as we go to John in West Palm Beach. Hi, John. Happy Friday. You're on the air. John, are you still with us?
John, are you with us?
Okay, we'll go back to you in a moment, John. It's 305-995-1800. Lots of emails and tweets coming into the Florida Roundup. Here's one for you, Zach, from Andy in Neptune Beach, Florida. When the talk of a push for offshore drilling began, it was put forward by opponents that without an onshore facility, drilling could not take place. Therefore, denial of land use for facilities would preclude drilling. Is that the case? I hope all Florida communities will band together to refuse this access. What about that aspect of this act? And certainly local governments have signed resolutions around Florida opposing offshore drilling.
Right. Well, what the Trump administration has access to, what they have purview over, is that federal offshore area. So whether there's a local regulation, I'm not sure how that would compare with what the Trump administration can do in terms of opening up land for drilling. So, to the extent that there's a lot of communities that don't want this type of activity, that's noted. It's up to them to kind of fill the comment section when this plan comes out to show the Trump administration that that's how they feel.
Yeah.
You know, there's some questions about kind of, what are we talking, how many miles offshore the jurisdiction here? Joe is in Gainesville with that kind of question. Go ahead, Joe, you're on the radio.
Yeah, just for reference discussion, how far off does Florida's jurisdiction go? 3 miles, 5, 10? My understanding is that federal waters go out at least 12 miles, but you might be able to see then rigs from Clearwater Beach.
Yeah. David, how about it? Where does the federal jurisdiction begin off the coast of Florida?
So on the Atlantic side, we go out about 3 miles or to the Gulf Stream, whichever is closer. Those are granted to us as the state of Florida as Florida waters. And then on the Gulf side, it's about 10 miles and pretty far out there. But most, I think, of what you would be talking about would be much further beyond that in a future lease sale. As we talked about, no one knows for certain what will be proposed, but I would guess when it comes to, as a crow flies from either coast, it would be much, much, much further than that. But we don't know yet.
And there's some spaces, like it's barred more than 200 miles off the coast of Tampa Bay, 125 miles from the Panhandle. Is that right in your understanding, David?
Yes, that's absolutely right. There are congressional moratoriums in large portions of the eastern Gulf of Mexico, which would preclude any involvement there. And then there's other areas that are within the military area that are that they have precedence over that would be unavailable to operations.
And but, lots of calls, emails, and tweets coming in. Let me just say that we are going to get to them in just a moment here on the Florida Roundup as we talk about the renewed discussion on offshore drilling off Florida's coast. Where do you stand on this? Get in touch with us. This is the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio. Welcome back to the Florida Roundup, and thanks for being with us this Friday. I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville.
And I'm Tom Hudson in Miami. There are two clusters of oil derricks on the ground in Florida, in Collier County in southwest Florida and in the Panhandle in Santa Rosa County near the border with Alabama. The oil fields have names like Blackjack Creek, Bear Island, and Sunnyland. The heyday of Florida onshore oil production was back in the 1970s. Today's Florida's wells produce less than 2 million barrels of oil per year.
Now, a new oil well could be drilled in the eastern Everglades in Broward County. A state appeals court says the state was wrong to deny a permit there. The state is considering its options, and local authorities would also have to issue a permit for drilling to start. As all of this is going on, at the same time, lawmakers are considering bills that would ban some or all types of fracking in Florida, another controversial means of energy extraction. And as we continue taking your calls here on the Florida Roundup, we want to know where you stand on the prospect of offshore drilling. It's 305-995-1800. Tweet us at Florida Roundup as we continue with Zach Coleman, climate and energy reporter at Politico, and David R. Micah, executive director of the Florida Petroleum Council. Zach, getting lots of emails and tweets opposing drilling in Florida. Here's just one of them. A listener says, these resources are finite and damaging to our health and the health of the local environment. Wouldn't it be wiser to invest in renewables and research into fusion technologies? How will future generations meet their energy needs? Let me ask you about this, given that you're covering climate and energy from D.C. and the Trump administration, which is focused on energy dominance and, of course, in 2015 withdrew from the Paris Climate Accords. And is not as focused on renewables and investing in other alternate energy technologies. This is a message that has largely fallen on deaf ears with the current administration. So as you cover this, when we get this kind of feedback from our listeners saying they'd like to see an additional focus on renewables, that is not in vogue in Washington right now, right?
Right. Well, to some extent, it's getting to be a little bit more in vogue. There's a lot of conversation happening in the Republican side of things about new kinds of investment in renewable research and technology. But the Trump administration certainly hasn't been talking about that in a major way.
Right. We hear a lot about energy dominance. How does the Trump White House define energy dominance?
Well, the Trump administration wants to use energy resources as a sort of geopolitical tool and also as a an economy building tool. So they view dredging up hydrocarbons, which are oil and natural gas, as a way to boost economic production and also export our fuel across the world and to build new alliances based on those fuels, to kind of say you don't have to be in league with Saudi Arabia or some other country that you might not agree with politically. We can provide you with our energy resources. And it should be noted that much of the energy that would be produced in offshore drilling is likely destined for export markets.
Yeah, in the last 10 years, obviously, we've seen a real revolution in American fossil fuel energy production. David Micah with the Florida Petroleum Council, the United States is turned into an exporter of oil and natural gas and other forms of fossil fuel-based energy. You've talked about how the public support of additional offshore energy exploration can change based upon national security issues and based upon economics. Oil prices are up 36% this year in terms of crude oil. Gasoline prices are up only a dime per gallon in Florida over the past year. At what price do you think, and does the Petroleum Council think, that public opinion begins to move, where now it is the majority is against opening up additional offshore drilling in the United States, not just off the coast of Florida, but elsewhere? But where do you see that moving as it relates to the price that consumers are paying?
Well, it's not a specific price point that I have. And if I thought there was one, for antitrust purposes, we don't speculate on pricing related matters. But history just tells us that that does change. But really, more importantly, we've made some incredible progress in both offshore and onshore. The advent of domestic production has changed the face of energy. It has removed us from being a huge importer to now, while still importing some oil, to now being able to also export and share that resource with the rest of the world that allows us to flourish. And it's really a positive that we need to pursue. And let me just continue one second. While we continue to look for new alternatives and renewables that add to that equation in a real positive way. A lot of people believe that it's one or the other, when in fact it's not. And when you look at some of the modern major oil companies, their investments in that larger portfolio of all kinds of energy are profound and changing the scope of energy overall for America.
And as we talk about the prospect of offshore drilling in Florida and energy issues, we want to thank David Armaica. He's executive director of the Florida Petroleum Council. David, thanks for being with us.
It's great to be with you and your listeners today, and I look forward to that continued discussion where we can do what our motto says, power past impossible when it comes with energy.
Thanks for that. And we need to note that before he was elected, or actually right after he was elected, Governor Ron DeSantis signed an executive order committing the state's Department of Environmental Protection to oppose offshore drilling. This, though, he had been decidedly more pro-drilling while serving in Congress. So that begs the question, what can we expect on this issue and related issues, environmental matters, from Governor Ron DeSantis? Well, Jackie Flynn Morganson is assistant editor at Mother Jones, and she's been writing about DeSantis' record thus far on the environment here in Florida. She joins us now. Jackie, thanks for joining the Florida Roundup. You know, Governor DeSantis has won bipartisan praise, as you report, for his commitment to Everglades water quality restoration. He's hired the state's first resiliency officer, science officer. These are moves that I think many didn't expect from DeSantis. They have surprised a lot of people. What has your reporting shown on this?
Hi, thanks for having me. I would agree that this is something that has gained bipartisan support. And it's kind of impressive to see based on where Florida stood with the previous governor. I think people are just shocked with the contrast there. And based on Ron DeSantis's record as a representative in the U.S. House, they weren't expecting this to come from him.
And what do you think is driving his moves, given that Governor DeSantis won by less than a half of a percentage point in Florida? He certainly seems to be walking a more pragmatic line on these environmental issues, which, as we've been talking about, are bipartisan. There's bipartisan opposition to offshore drilling, great concern about the Everglades. These are economic issues for Florida. The environment is the economy here, essentially. It sounds. Do you think he's gotten that message and that's what's driving his decisions on this?
I think so. I think he's an opportunist a little bit in that way, where he recognized that this was an issue that's important to Floridians during the campaign, especially with Red Tide. We reported that, you know, as people were going to vote in the polls, they could smell the stench of dead fish. So I think it was an issue right on the forefront of voters' minds, and he jumped on that from the beginning.
You know, what's striking here is that he made the environment his first position paper as he was running for governor. It wasn't health care. It wasn't education. It wasn't tourism or the economy or taxes. It was the environment, as you mentioned, Jackie, because it was so much in the headlines over the summer here. And we had the second summer in 3 years where blue-green algae really fouled up the East Coast and the West Coast areas around Lake Okeechobee. And so as he came into power and took over the governor's office, certainly a stark contrast to how former governor, now U.S. Senator Rick Scott, related to the environment in Florida, but also how he has been able to bend, to some degree, the Republican legislature in Florida toward some environmental policies and, frankly, environmental spending to the tune of over $600 million in this proposed budget that is so striking at this time.
Yeah, I think that's huge. I think that the Republicans in the Florida legislature have also recognized that this is a really popular issue. Polling from last month shows that 59% of Floridians approve of what DeSantis is doing so far, including 42% of Democrats, and they think that has to do with his stance on the environment. So those people in the legislature see exactly what's going on.
It's 305-995-1800 as we talk about energy and environmental issues around Florida this Friday. Tweets at Florida Roundup. Let me ask you as a follow-up. The billionaire activist Tom Steyer, who had floated with running for president himself, is on the ground here in Florida working to turn out Democratic voters. And he called Governor DeSantis recently a fake environmentalist. He said, even though DeSantis has appointed a chief science officer and made other moves, that he hasn't come out swinging against climate emissions or the root causes of climate change. He says that undercuts his efforts and that this is just window dressing. And so do you think that's an argument that gains traction among the environmental community in this state who have been watching, I think, what Governor DeSantis is doing quite closely?
I think that is a really good point. The conservationist that I spoke to for this story said, while DeSantis has been a pleasant surprise on the environment, just based on who the previous governor was and where they expected Ron DeSantis to go, he is lacking in a lot of ways. The biggest way, I would say, is because of his kind of silence on reducing carbon dioxide emissions from the state. And so I think that is probably the biggest hole in his environmental policy, and something that I think will be interesting to see how he progresses on that issue.
Zach Coleman with Politico. What about the balance here that the governor in Florida is trying to maintain? Close ties with the Trump administration, as you reporting the Trump administration pushing forward with a plan that may lead to additional offshore drilling off the shores of Florida in federal waters, while at the same time, as Melissa mentioned, really pushing a policy of environmentalism, investment in the environment and clean water on shore in Florida.
Yeah, I mean, it's surely tricky, but at the same time, that's why you maintain a close relationship with the president, so you can influence him in some way. And, you know, he knows full well, DeSantis knows full well, that Trump spends a lot of time in Florida, and I bet he's thinking that he can make an emotional appeal. He's not going to talk about climate change with the president. He knows that's not a winning issue, but maybe he can make an appeal on offshore drilling.
We're getting tweets about President Trump's presence in Florida as we talk about offshore drilling, and lots of calls from all over the state. Paula tweets the Florida Roundup, there will be tar balls washing up on our beaches indefinitely. I wonder if the president will have to unload Mar-a-Lago before that happens. Let us know what you think about oil drilling in Florida. It's 305-995-1800 as we go to Andrew in Tallahassee. Hi, Andrew. Thanks for calling in. And you're a geologist, is that right?
Yeah, I am. I've actually worked with the state, and the problem that I see with oil drilling in Florida is I just don't see it being economically feasible. Our state is comprised almost completely of limestone, and most geologists know you need where you get an environment where you get a lot of limestone is the complete opposite of the environment where you would get a lot of oil. And so I just do not see Florida having vast oil reserves to where it would
even
be worse.
And you're saying not even far offshore?
Well, there's a small area that could potentially have oil, and that's maybe offshore on the northeast, kind of where the armpit of Florida is. And that's only because we have the Mississippi Delta.
The armpit
there.
Of Florida.
I think we call that the Big Bend.
I've never heard it referred
right?
to that way. Yeah. So, okay. So you're saying it's just not worth the potential harm, not worth the effort. Okay.
And you bring up a point about Ron DeSantis. I think he is he understands that the economic and environmental policies of Florida are very much intertwined. And we make so much money off of our tourist industry, and it's like to let a few oil companies just come in and, you know, maybe find a little bit of oil. It just seems like a huge waste of time, and it's just unnecessary.
Thank you for that. That's Andrew in Tallahassee, and this is the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio. All right, Zach Coleman of Politico. That begs the question, will Ron DeSantis break with the president on this issue, given all of the arguments we're hearing against this idea?
Well, I would imagine that he's going to be having some conversations with the president. Everything that you see about public opinion polling in Florida suggests that it wouldn't be popular for DeSantis to advocate for offshore drilling. So I'm sure there are some conversations happening right now. And, you know, we'll see where the president comes out on this at the end of the day. It could end up being something where, you know, the president has gone around talking about his budget, saying, you know, there's been some backlash to things that were in the budget proposal. And then he'll go to that place and say, hey, I went against my deputies. I'm restoring funding for the Great Lakes. He could do something like that with Florida, too, where his interior department puts out a plan that says we're going to do offshore drilling in Florida. And then he goes out and says, that was a dumb idea. I know you don't like that. I'm taking that out. I could totally see that happen.
A little bit of a two-step. Yeah.
Yeah. But Jackie, what's interesting, right, is even say, for instance, this plan comes out and say, for instance, Governor DeSantis or other Florida politicians are successful in trying to carve out Florida. The fact is it's a big ocean. And if Louisiana wants it, if Texas wants it, other place want it, as we've seen with other oil disasters, turns out it's a shared environment.
Yeah, I think that's totally possible. And one big thing I think that's missing from this conversation is that the 2020 elections are coming up, and Florida is hugely important to Donald Trump. So I think it is possible, could be in the cards, that he might turn around and shut down his own administration's own policy, because it's a losing issue for him, especially in Florida.
Hmm. More of your calls and tweets after the break as we talk about offshore oil drilling in Florida. Here's a tweet from Lane in Jacksonville as we go to a quick break. Why are people so determined to drill for more oil but unwilling to request and invest in conservation? Oil is not an unlimited resource. It will run out one day. Then what? We must be willing to reduce or refuse some amenities if we want to protect our future. What do you think, Florida, as we talk about energy and environmental issues this Friday on the Florida Roundup? Give us your calls and tweets. It's 305-995-1800. Tweet us at Florida Roundup. Where do you stand? We'll get to more of your feedback from across the state this Friday after this. This is the Florida Roundup, and this is Florida Public Radio. I'm Melissa Ross. Tom Hudson is in Miami. I'm in Jacksonville. And you're going to join us from wherever you are in the state right after this.
We're back on the Florida Roundup here on Florida Public Radio. Thanks for listening. I'm Tom Hudson in Miami.
And I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville with your calls and tweets as we talk about the Trump administration's renewed push for offshore drilling off Florida's coast. 305-995-1800. Give us a call. Libby is in Plantation, Florida. Hey, Libby. So you have some connections to the oil business, correct?
Yes. My husband worked in the oil business for over 40 years.
Oh, wow.
All over the world.
Did you go around the world with him?
Most of the places I did, yes.
Okay, so what do you think about this whole issue?
Well, I've seen what it can do to the environment. I've seen all the different places that we've been to, especially Houston, Texas. I'm like, when we went there, I thought, oh, great, we're going to be near the beach, just like where I am in Florida, and and you can't swim in the water there.
So you're worried about another Deepwater Horizon disaster, it sounds like?
Well, this is it. And the other gentleman who was on there before, he said that it wasn't deep water. Well, I beg your pardon, but it is deep water. That's one of the deepest places in the Gulf.
Okay, yeah, Libby, thanks for that. Let me get Zach Coleman to respond to that. Zach, you know, I think that Libby gets to the heart of why Floridians are so apprehensive about this. They have vivid memories of the disaster in the Gulf, and they simply don't trust the industry when industry reps say, well, safety has improved and we can make sure that this goes well. There's just not a lot of trust, even as you hear from people that have connections to the industry.
Right. And, you know, when industry says safety has improved and that's why we don't have these regulations anymore, keep in mind the blowout preventer rule, which was the thing that failed in Deepwater Horizon. This is a new rule that the Obama administration wrote in 2016. The Trump administration scaled that back in 2018. So technology might move fast, but I don't know if it moves that fast. It was pretty much day one when the administration came in and said, we're not going to do what the Obama administration has been working on for years to try to remedy this problem that happened in Deepwater Horizon. So, yeah, and when I talk to people based in Florida about public opinion polling, about how people view this issue, often it came up, Deepwater Horizon is still a vivid memory.
Yeah.
And, you know, oystermen haven't returned to the area. You know, fishermen haven't returned to the area. It's just,
sure,
it hurt the economy.
And Jackie, certainly Ron DeSantis remembers that too. I think we might have lost Jackie.
It sort of burned into my...
Oh, yeah. Go ahead, Jackie.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Oh, so sorry. I said I actually grew up in Florida, too, so I remember the Deepwater Horizon spill as well, and I'm sure Ron DeSantis does, too.
It's a demarcation point, and it's still showing up in the Florida budget, in the state government budget, because of the settlement dollars that are involved. There was, you know, Melissa, as you remember, there was debate. There's still a debate about whether or not some panhandle communities can use the BP money. It's called the BP money in the Florida revenue. About helping rebuild after Hurricane Michael. And here we are,
it's
you know,
remarkable.
So many years after the actual disaster.
It's been a long time. And, yeah, still reverberating through our economy and our politics, certainly.
Yeah. Lots of calls here about alternative energy sources in the ocean as well. Kevin in Wesley Chapel, you've been patient on line 12. Go ahead, Kevin. You're on the radio.
Yeah, I've been trying to steer this conversation in the correct direction for over a decade now. Marco Rubio asked for 100 ideas back in 2007, and this was one of the ideas that I published in his book, 100 Ideas for Florida, which is basically this. We have the premier ocean current in the world right off the shore of Miami. It's miles deep, it's tens of miles wide, and it can provide enough energy to power the entire eastern seaboard of the United States. Now, I support drilling, but the drilling that I want to see is the undersea drilling that would support the infrastructure of the undersea turbines that are necessary to feed this power back into Florida. Mm. As Florida moves forward into the future, we could be a net energy exporter to Georgia, South Carolina, North Carolina, Virginia, and other states that are hungry for power, because the conversion of the automobile fleet from gasoline into electricity is happening now.
Yeah, Kevin, so, appreciate that idea. Really interesting there, certainly. And that 2007 reference was when Senator Rubio was Speaker Rubio of the Florida House of Representatives in Tallahassee. Jackie, let me ask you kind of about this idea of alternative ideas regarding alternative energy as it relates to the current administration here in Florida. You wrote in Mother Jones about the Governor Ron DeSantis and his environmental policies and how he has taken steps, for instance, to appoint the state's first ever chief science officer. He has created an Office of Resiliency, doing all this without mentioning specifically climate change. Is there a tilt, in your estimation, toward alternative energy interest in the part of Florida, specifically solar energy, frankly?
You know, when he signed his executive order on January 10th, it didn't really mention renewable energy or alternative energy sources. It didn't even mention the words climate change. It mentioned resiliency and sort of adapting to climate change. But there is one part of the executive order which you mentioned, which is appointing the chief science officer. And the goal of that office is just to sort of point the state in the direction that science demands. And from the caller who just called in, I think it's pretty clear that the state and science is demanding that we go in the direction of exploring new technologies. So it's a possibility, but it's not something he specifically has lined up on his list.
It's the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio. And we continue to take your calls about drilling and energy issues in Florida. Sharon is in the Keys. Hey, Sharon, go ahead quickly. You're on the air. Okay.
Hi.
Go ahead, Sharon.
Hi. Yeah. I was motivated to call, you know, when he was saying how, like, we were so lucky and we had only a 10 cent increase in gas, like, we ought to support the whole program. We are. We financially, we've had an 80 cent variance from it within a 6 month period here. So I don't know where he got that math from.
So, okay. Sharon, let me just interrupt and say,
I thought you wanted to ask, what did we even vote for in Florida? We don't want offshore drilling. Is that what you wanted to say?
Yeah, that was ultimately my final.
Okay. Don't mean to cut you off. It's just that we're a little tight on time. Zach Coleman, climate and energy reporter for Politico. What about this idea that the voters feel that their will on this is being thwarted? They passed this constitutional amendment. They've made it clear where they stand. Still, though, that could be overridden, theoretically, by the federal government. They don't need congressional approval if they decide to move forward with this. What about that?
Yeah, well, the constitutional amendment was about state waters. And as David Mica explained earlier, there's a distinction between state and federal waters. So the Trump administration has jurisdiction over federal waters. So
yeah,
in the spirit of things, it would definitely conflict with what Floridians said they want. But, you know, the Trump administration is looking at potentially a 100-mile buffer. That's what they think they want. But, you know, at the same time, Florida's federal delegation has very uniformly said that they don't want this. And my guess is they're going to make that point to the president early, often, and consistently.
You know, Sharon talked about the numbers that I gave out. It's Tom Hudson. I did give out those numbers, Sharon. That was a year-over-year change in the average price of gasoline in the state of Florida. Obviously, it's going to vary within those 12 months, and the Florida Keys, kind of at the literal end of the pipeline, is going to see much wider variance. So the change in price is the average change in price of the average gallon of gasoline in the state of Florida is about a dime different today than where it was a year ago. Lots of differences depending upon where you get your gas. But Jackie and Zach, I'd like you to kind of talk about the economics here. Whereas, you know, 10 years ago, there was an incredible regulatory push to open up and look for new areas of energy exploration in the United States. It led to the Dakotas, specifically, and Oklahoma with fracking and new technology, and has allowed the United States to become energy independent and become an exporter of energy. Oil prices are half what they were a decade ago now. Gasoline prices, about $3 or so a gallon. Is there an economic component here where Governor Ron DeSantis and others that have made the environment a key issue on the Republican side, they've been able to take advantage of the relative cheapness of energy, not that it is cheap, but at low price compared to where it was 10 years ago and where it may go? Jackie?
Well, I'm sorry.
Oh, go ahead. Go ahead, Zach.
Well, I would just say certainly there's an effect from U.S. oil drilling on oil prices. However, oil prices are set on a global scale. So it's not to say that if you produce X amount more energy in the U.S. that you will drive down the price of oil by that same, amount.
Sure.
It's a global commodity. So there are gains to be captured in local economies. Let's say you have a company that builds, gear that would service an offshore drilling rig. That's money. You know, that's an economic driver of some sort, but by and large, there are also costs. You know, you might have an oil spill that disrupts tourism. You have continued climate change, which will bring costs to the shores from higher intensity storms and depressed coastal property values to any number of things.
We are getting a tweet from State Rep. Anna Eskamani on the Florida Roundup. We need a 100% renewable energy state. We plan to refile legislation next session and are actively recruiting Republican co-sponsors too. Getting tweets about Floridians against fracking. Lots of feedback on Twitter. Many more tweets than we can get on the air during this hour. So thanks for everyone who connected with us. And thanks to Zach Coleman, climate and energy reporter at Politico, and Jackie Flynn Mogensen, assistant editor at Mother Jones, covering Governor DeSantis's moves on the environment. Such an interesting discussion. Thanks for being with us, guys.
Thank you so much for having me.
That's our show. The Florida Roundup is produced by WJCT Public Media in Jacksonville and WLRN Public Media in Miami. Alex Gonzalez and Heather Schatz are producers. I'm Melissa Ross.
Jason Zabka is the WLRN Director of Radio Programming and our Technical Director. Our theme music is provided by Miami jazz guitarist Aaron Libos at aaronlibos.com. Thanks for calling and tweeting. Have a great weekend. Thanks for supporting Florida Public Radio. I'm Tom Hudson.